No Humor to Give Consequence by A. Marguerite. Read by Cory Gathonia. Rated for general audiences and no archive warnings apply. For the fandoms of Pride and Prejudice and Temeraire. Featuring the characters Elizabeth Bennet and Wollstonecraft, the dragon. Part 6 in the A Monstrous Regiment series. There was to be a ball at Netherfield Park, the largest house in the neighborhood. Wollstonecraft was in favor of the ball simply because the man renting Netherfield, Mr. Bingley, needed a great many things fetched and carried from London, and he was willing to pay Wollstonecraft to do it. The village of Meryton had its own dragon courier business, and Wollstonecraft had decided to hire out her services through it while Lizzie and Charlotte were playing at being young ladies, and the rest of Wollstonecraft's crew were scattered to the corners of England to visit with their families. It was a good way to keep from being bored, and, any road, Wollstonecraft had to be seen flying on her own while in Hertfordshire. It would be disastrous for anyone to know Captain Bennet and Miss Bennet were the same person, or that Lieutenant Lucas and Miss Lucas were the same person. Wollstonecraft did not quite understand why. Both Lizzie and Charlotte had endeavored to explain it multiple times, but it was an argument founded in that human strain of logic that was not logic at all, but completely arbitrary traditions. Still, Wollstonecraft did her best to respect human traditions. It was not the fault of humans that they were such weak, disorderly, and illogical creatures, or so easily injured or made upset. When Wollstonecraft came back to the pavilion out of which the couriers ran their business, all the little courier dragons, a motley collection of graylings and Winchesters, came clambering up to her. How many boxes of wax candles had she brought from London? Was it true she had brought instruments for a full orchestra? Was the ballroom decorated yet? The bravest Winchester, Watford, asked,
"Do you think the humans would mind very much if we watched them dance? We would not go into the ballroom or get very close.
Indeed, I carried some of the glass panes from London to Netherfield when it was being rebuilt after the invasion, so I know there are windows from the floor to the ceiling in the ballroom. We would be able to see in from the garden."
"Humans are very delicate creatures, easily overset," Wollstonecraft cautioned him. "You would have to be very sure that they could not see you. Otherwise, they are apt to startle."
Gloria, a pretty little grayling, chirped,
"We shall be very careful. They do not notice us when we watch the Meryton assemblies, and even then we must take turns looking in, for the humans all dance on the second floor, and the windows are very small."
The dragons all agreed that it was great fun to watch the humans at a ball. It was so different from watching humans walk about in the straggling and disorderly way they usually did.
"I think a ball is a sort of mating dance," opined the largest Winchester, Brinsley.
She cocked her head to the side.
"Only, I think the dams of Meryton are very picky, or the sires are very bad, for very few people mate successfully once the ball is over."
"It is more like formation flying," said Wollstonecraft. "The humans move about together to encourage a sense of camaraderie, in case they must give battle later on. All the officers in Portugal were constantly having balls when they were not hunting. But, to return to an earlier point, it is very nice to watch the humans all move around in such orderly patterns. Normally, they are lackadaisical when they are in packs."
"Well," she amended, thinking of the regiment of infantry that she now completely regarded as her own.
"Not in the army. They have some sense of order, even if they must be yelled into their lines and squares at times."
"And the humans rig themselves out so nicely for balls," added Gloria. "Oh, yes, will your captain rig herself out?" asked Watford.
"Yes," said Wollstonecraft, very proud. "She will, and will be very splendid, I assure you. She said she will come by after the ball."
The day of the ball, Wollstonecraft decided against going with the couriers, for she felt it rather beneath her dignity to skulk about in the gardens, spying through windows on the humans. Besides, Lizzie would come to her and tell her everything that happened. Wollstonecraft took advantage of the other dragons being away and sprawled out to her full extent, wings unfurled and limbs akimbo. It was posture Wollstonecraft would never adopt when any impressionable young dragon was present, for Wollstonecraft felt it her duty to set a good example of military bearing and propriety, but when there was no one to see her, well, why should she not be comfortable? Wollstonecraft slept contentedly in this position and woke to the best sound in the world, Lizzie calling out, "Wollstonecraft, dearest!" Wollstonecraft opened one eye to see Lizzie approaching in the gray pre-dawn. Lizzie had on her boat cloak and held up a lantern. Her head was uncovered save for a gold diadem with some very pretty filigree work, a piece of jewelry Wollstonecraft had seized as a prize from some French ladies during the invasion. It looked much better on Lizzie than on its original owner. Wollstonecraft gazed upon it with satisfaction, though she did wish there were some jewels on it. Gold was all very well and good, and showed that Lizzie had plenty of treasure and skill enough to get it and keep it, but jewels really displayed one's prowess, and they sparkled so much more nicely. "Are you awake, my dear?" Lizzie asked.
"Yes," said Wollstonecraft, raising her head. "I was only thinking that you ought to wear jewels in your hair, Lizzie."
"I think I would have trouble dancing if I did," replied Lizzie with a faint smile. "They would all fall out of my hair when I had to jump or turn, and then I would put a foot on the fallen jewels and fall down, disgracing myself and probably breaking my ankle." Wollstonecraft conceded the point.
"Let me see the rest of your ball rig, Lizzie. Antiope said Captain Crawford ordered it for you from her own modiste."
Lizzie set down the lantern, then unclasped her boat cloak. "Ta-da!" She held her arms out to display a gold undergown and a diaphanous white overgown of crepe, with short sleeves and a high waist. Lizzie also had on very long gloves, up past her elbows, as well as pearl earrings and a pearl necklace. She looked magnificent, quite tidy and orderly and obviously very successful. Though, again, Wollstonecraft thought Lizzie would look better with jewels, and perhaps her medals as well.
"Even if you were worried about the jewels falling off your neck," said Wollstonecraft, when Lizzie looked as if she was trying not to laugh, "your medals would not fall, for they are pinned on, and when you wear them into battle they do not get in your way. Or, no, I think, Lizzie, when you get back to London you should tell Captain Crawford's modiste that you need a new overdress. How magnificent you would look in an overdress of gold net with jewels and your medals pinned to it."
Lizzie laughed, but it sounded hollow to Wollstonecraft's ear. "I did wish I had my medals, Wollstonecraft." "Why?" A terrible suspicion occurred.
"You did not meet with any Frenchmen."
Lizzie impatiently tossed her boat cloak over the desk where the human clerk counted out payments and wrote receipts. "I wish I had, then I might have proved my worth to the company."
"It is the lack of jewels," said Wollstonecraft. "You must show me your gowns before balls, Lizzie. I can spot these things for you in advance."
"Oh, you are the dearest creature," said Lizzie, opening her arms. Wollstonecraft very carefully lowered her head so that Lizzie could hug her snout. Lizzie did so and sighed. "I don't think it was my rig, Wollstonecraft. I was dressed more finely than any of my sisters, which had me in a quake at first, till I got in the ballroom and saw that the host's sisters had gowns like mine. This is the new style, apparently, the overgown of cape over covered slip. And most women there had on pearls, so I think I was right there, but..." She hugged Wollstonecraft's snout tightly. "But I do not think I am very good at being a lady." Wollstonecraft let out a low, discontented rumble. Lizzie said in a brash, overbright voice, "I really thought I was doing so well. I watched Jane and made sure that I walked like her and talked in the same tones she did. And I spent all week learning dances and how to move in my skirts gracefully. But I... Oh, the most abominable thing!"
"What? Did no one dance with you?"
Wollstonecraft demanded, quite offended. "How dare they? Lizzie was division captain. Who could possibly outrank her? Every person in that ballroom ought to be crowding about Lizzie, begging for the honor of her dance." Why, even if Lizzie hadn't been a division captain, she could easily defeat any female human in a field of battle, which would put her at the top of any draconic hierarchy. "It was hardly as dire as that," said Lizzie, pulling away with a laugh. "I did dance half the evening." "No, It is really rather silly, and I am very foolish to be upset by it. I danced one dance with this gentleman, Mr. Darcy, and, well, it was bad dance, but I really do not think it was my fault it was bad. I recalled nearly all the steps and corrected my course very quickly when I found myself in the wrong position. Lizzie performed a sprightly turn, her skirts swirling prettily. I held up my end of the conversation, too, and tried all number of topics, but he had hardly anything to say in reply. I do not think it was because I picked bad topics, for I asked Jane about them afterwards, and she said they were neither dull nor offensive.
I suppose I'm to be a very stupid man, then, said Wollstonecraft, for you can easily converse with anybody. I myself am not loquacious by nature, and yet we are always talking.
Lizzie pulled out the chair from the clerk's desk and turned it so that she could sit while facing Wollstonecraft. No, no, everyone says Mr. Darcy is very intelligent, and I suppose he must be, for my father says he is, and my father is a very severe critic when it comes to the intellect of others. He would never give anyone the benefit of the doubt on that head. Hmm, said Wollstonecraft, who did not have a high opinion of the intelligence of any human. Her captain and her first lieutenant excepted. Lizzie folded her arms across her chest and stretched her legs out in front of her. Mr. Darcy was at least intelligent enough to realize I did not belong there. When I was sitting down for want of a partner, the host, Mr. Bingley, tried to get him to dance with me.
And he would not?
This defied reason. Why would anyone refuse to dance with Lizzie? She was so precise during formation work. Lizzie studied the satin toes of her dancing slippers. No, he could not. In fact, he told Mr. Bingley, I tolerated her for your sake once, but she is not handsome enough to tempt me twice. You are dancing with the only Bennet girl worth looking at, or talking to, and I am in no humor to give consequence to young ladies who are slighted by other men. She forced a smile and tapped her temple with a gloved finger. It is graven upon my memory.
Well, I like that,
said Wollstonecraft, bristling.
Not handsome enough to tempt him. Why, you are one of the handsomest women in the aerial corps. Everyone says so.
Yes, dear, says Lizzie Riley, but there are not very many women in the corps. And we none of us are as pretty as society ladies who are all pale and soft and unscarred, and who do not move as if they were about to engage someone in a fencing bout.
And not worth talking to. What an offense to reason. He was the one not worth talking to. You tried to talk with him and he would not answer.
Wollstonecraft clawed at the floor of the porter's pavilion, too angry to be still.
I think your father is wrong. Mr. Darcy strikes me as a very idiotic person if he thinks you are not worth looking at or talking to. And to say that in public where you could very well hear him, he cannot be an intelligent man.
Lizzie laughed, more genuinely this time. I am so pleased to have you as my partisan. And, added Wollstonecraft, as a clincher.
As further proof of his stupidity, you and I are the backbone of one of only four existent formations. How can anyone with so interesting a life, who played so vital a role in the history of our nation, not be worth talking to? What did he do during the invasion?
Stay at home, in his estate in Derbyshire, I believe, said Lizzie. I did console myself for the fact that Mr. Darcy would not be standing about in ballrooms declaring I was plain and unpleasant without me, and my service.
He would not,
agreed Wollstonecraft. Thank you, dearest, said Lizzie, getting up and kissing Wollstonecraft on the nose. Will you fly me back to Longbourn? Wollstonecraft did, but was fuming all the rest of the day. How could anyone fail to see that Lizzie was the best person in all of England? Wollstonecraft certainly saw it and knew it. That was why Lizzie was her captain. She tried to fly off her bad humor, and Gloria, who was rather dim, even for a Grayling, invited herself along. No hint Wollstonecraft made could deter Gloria from telling Wollstonecraft all about the ball.
And the men lined up on one side, and the women on the other. Oh, and there's one of the dancers down there, on the horse.
Who is that?
Said Wollstonecraft, looking down.
It is not Mr. Bingley, for I saw him when I was delivering all the candles for his ball.
Gloria swooped down for a better look, then rose back up.
That is his friend, Mr. Darcy. I heard everyone calling him Mr. Darcy at the ball yesterday.
He slighted my captain, said Wollstonecraft, indignant. He would not dance with her, and she is the finest formation flyer on the entire peninsula.
I think it is a mating dance after all, said Gloria.
That is worse, cried Wollstonecraft. Not wishing to mate with my captain? Does he not know what treasure she could offer if he did? Does he not realize there is no stronger dam on offer in Hertfordshire? And to say she was not handsome enough. Oh, I am so angry I could spit acid.
And so Wollstonecraft did. At a tree, very near the road Mr. Darcy was on. The tree trunk dissolved away and the top crashed into the road. Mr. Darcy's horse was far stupider and much more disobedient than the ones Colonel Fitzwilliam had. The horse reared and threw Mr. Darcy off into a mud puddle. Gloria cocked her head to the side.
Did you intend that?
No,
lied Wollstonecraft haughtily.
But if I had, I rather think he deserved it.